This is VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. China deployed scores of planes and warships and fired live missiles in the waters around Taiwan Thursday in its largest ever military drills in the region. They come a day after U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi made a solidarity trip to the self-ruled island. Through state media, China's military confirmed multiple firings of conventional missiles in the waters off Taiwan as part of planned exercises in six zones set to run until noon Sunday, and activated more than 100 planes, including fighter jets and bombers, and over 100 warships. China views Pelosi's visit as an unacceptable violation of what it sees as its sovereignty over the island. In China's view, the visit's the latest in a series of U.S. moves toward a more explicit support for Taiwan. Earlier Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken sought to ease tensions with China, insisting that their Taiwan policy has not changed, and described Pelosi's visit as routine. But prominent Taiwan democracy activist Weir Kaiksha says a lot has changed. In an interview with Reuters news agency, Weir, who met with Pelosi during her stay, said her visit sent a signal to the Taiwanese people of a stronger U.S. commitment towards defending the island.
The leader of the ruling party of the United States, a close ally to President Joe Biden, came to Taiwan in such a high profile, made sure the whole world see her, and then made sure the United States military, regional defense force all came forward and say, we're going to die for protecting our speaker.
Pelosi arrived in Japan Thursday, the last stop on her Asian tour. This is VOA News. A Russian judge Thursday convicted U.S. basketball star Brittany Griner of deliberately bringing hashish oil into the country and sentenced her to 9 years in prison, even as Griner said she had no intention of committing a crime and had made an honest mistake in packing vape cartridges in her luggage. Judge Anna Sotnikova said the time Griner has served in custody since her arrest in February at a Moscow airport would count towards her prison term. Griner reacted to the sentence with little emotion. She listened to the verdict from the defendant's courtroom cage, a blank stare on her face. But as she was led from the courtroom in handcuffs, she looked at a news camera and said, "I love my family." In a statement, U.S. President Joe Biden, who has authorized U.S. top officials to try to negotiate a prisoner swap with Russia to secure the release of convicted spy Paul Whelan as well as Griner, characterized the basketball player's sentence as unacceptable and called on Russia to release her immediately. Biden said U.S. officials will continue to work tirelessly and pursue every possible avenue to bring Brittany and Paul Whelan home safely as soon as possible. The U.S. contends Russia has illegally detained both Whelan and Griner. The labor market remains one of the U.S. economy's strongest parts, but new figures released Thursday show more U.S. residents have been filing for jobless benefits. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Jobless aid claims rose by 6,000 last week. The total number of Americans collecting jobless benefits went up 48,000. American employers posted fewer job openings in June, though the figure is still high, and the labor market is still considered strong, even as the economy deals with decades-high inflation and rising interest rates. Still, tomorrow's July jobs report is expected to show employers added 250,000 jobs last month, a healthy number in normal times, but it would be the lowest one since December 2020. Sagar Magani, Washington.
U.S. federal meteorologists say the 2022 hurricane season may not be quite as busy as they initially thought, but it could still be more active than normal. Forecasters for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Thursday trimmed their original hurricane season outlook from a 65% chance for an above-normal activity to a 60% chance, and this increased odds of a normal season from 25 to 30% because of uneven sea surface temperatures, including a patch of cooler water off Portugal. Lead hurricane outlook forecaster Matthew Rosenkranz said parts of the Atlantic are warmer than normal, but the variability had forecasters backing off the higher end of their predictions. Repeating this hour's top story, China deployed scores of planes and warships and fired live missiles in the waters near Taiwan Thursday in its largest ever military drills, a day after U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi made a visit to the self-ruled island. Reporting to your remote, I'm Jeff Custer. This
This is Africa News Tonight, on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, the DRC has ordered the spokesman for the UN peacekeeping mission to leave the country. And Libyan leaders should support the agreement to hold presidential and parliamentary election that the U.S. Special Envoy, Libya's Richard Norlin, says. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, we start with elections coming up in Kenya. Out of the four candidates running in Kenya's presidential election next week, three have running mates who are women, including frontrunner Raila Odinga. The election could herald the breakthrough in Kenya's national politics. But female politicians say getting to this historic point has not been an easy journey, as Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
It is unprecedented in Kenya. Three of the four candidates running in the August 9 presidential election have female running mates. Pollsters say former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and his running mate, former Justice Minister Martha Karua, lead the pack just days before the vote. Tom Wolf is an American pollster and political researcher in Nairobi.
When you have a woman with the public prominence of Martha Karua, who is an MP for 15 or 20 years, she served in Mwai Kibaki's cabinet, and she quit on principle. Then she's been leading her own political party, NARC Kenya. I think that's made it easier for the other two presidential candidates to see that it's quite fine and maybe even politically advantageous to have a woman as a running mate.
Justina Wamae is running with presidential contender Professor George Wajakoya. She grew up watching prominent women politicians like Martha Karua, who is now her competitor.
Martha Karua and the other ladies, Mama Ngilu, they cracked the glass ceiling. Now we've blown it up open. Three of us is a big thing.
Her Roots Party has come up with an unprecedented manifesto in Kenya promising to execute those found guilty of corruption, implement a four-day work week, and legalize marijuana.
Professor George Ajakoya and myself have a vision. We are telling you that we want to legalize industrial hemp for economic upswing. Our aim is that we will not increase taxes, we will pay off the debt, and we'll shun donor funding because this country must be respected.
Meanwhile, Ruth Mutua is running with AGANU Party presidential candidate David Wahiga. Some Kenyans say the role of women is being politicized, while others say women are finally being recognized for their work in a male-dominated field. Julie Kisaina and Ronald Talam are residents of Nairobi with divergent views.
We grew up being told that the men are supposed to dominate the society, they're supposed to lead us, but now that everyone is recognizing what we can do and the opening up to give us space to express ourselves and also to assist in leadership, it's great.
My take, it is a gender card issue that is being played and is being politicized in Kenya.
Two women have lost previous bids for the top seat in Kenya. Political observers say this election may mark the first time that a woman takes the second highest political seat as Kenya's deputy president. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Nairobi.
As mentioned earlier, three of the four candidates running in Kenya's presidential election next week have female running mates, including the frontrunner and former Prime Minister of Kenya, Raila Odinga. VOA's Africa 54 managing editor Vincent Makori says it is a significant breakthrough for women trying to reach the upper echelons of power in Kenya.
I see this as a very big kind of a push for women to come to the center of the political leadership in this country. In Kenya at the moment, the running mate, of course, is it could be potentially become the next president of this country. So through them, people see the likelihood, the potential of having a female president in the coming who knows, 5 years or 10 years. So this has really energized the women voters, but also many other Kenyans, including men, who think this is really helping to change the look of leadership in this country. There are those who feel like a woman at that level would be good for the country because she might be more sensitive to certain issues that affect women and girls. And so it has become something that is very significant in this particular election.
Is this considered a breakthrough then for women in terms of entering the top echelon of Kenyan politics?
Indeed. In the past, of course, women have gotten, you know, tried to get into the top echelons of the Kenyan politics. And years ago, there was a female presidential candidate, which was the very first time. Her name is Charity Ngilu, who until recently was serving as a governor. She's been in the cabinet, very high profile. And so it's not the first time a woman is going for the top position. In fact, that was a presidential candidate herself. But what people are seeing is that at least to see a man select a female as a running mate, it's quite some development in the country, because it has always been obvious that the running mate or the vice president of the country is a man. In the history of this country, there has never been like a deputy president or a vice president who was female. So while we may see women in the cabinet positions, but getting so close to the presidency is something that hasn't happened in the past. So people are seeing this as being very, very significant.
You've seen some of these campaign speeches, and I see pictures, too, where the female running mate stands next to the presidential candidate when he's making his speech. Do they ever turn the podium over to the woman? Does she speak?
Oh, they do speak. In fact, the running mate, for example, of Raila Odinga, Martha Karua, speaks quite a lot. She sometimes has gone to rallies just on our own to campaign alongside other women. So, in fact, they're not just standing next to presidential candidates as flower girls or so, no, so to speak. Actually, they have been very strong in the campaign trail. And the reason why they are given a chance to speak a lot, because it is believed that they will bring votes by speaking, because they make a case for why this presidency is going to be better because of me. You know, they're not kind of there to support the presidential candidate only, but they're saying because of me, working with him will make a better government.
That's VOA Africa 54's Vincent Bakori speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Nairobi earlier today. The U.S. Ambassador and Special Envoy to Libya, Richard Nolden, has strongly urged all Libyan leaders to avoid any escalatory steps and to support the agreement to hold presidential and parliamentary elections as the only way to establish a legitimate government. But the outgoing U.N. advisor on Libya, Stephanie Williams, said current politicians are opportunistic and work for their own interests, so they want to keep transitional governments ongoing. Wolfgang Porstai, former Austrian military attaché, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
He and other international actors like ANSMIL and the European Union made similar calls already several times before. The international community, unfortunately, including the United States, does not really have a lot of credibility in Libya anymore. There were simply too many threats with sanctions which did not materialize, or with sanctions which were not really serious, and other demands without any kind of serious follow-up. So the call will certainly not influence the decision-making of the Libyan actors. The notable exceptions with regard to credibility of international actors in Libya are Turkey, Egypt, and a few other Arab countries.
The outgoing UN advisor on Libya, Stephanie Williams, said that the Libyan politicians are opportunistic and work for their own interests, adding that the recent protests in Libya were a reaction to the inability of the politicians to reach consensus on constitutional framework for elections because the current political class wants to keep transitional governments ongoing serving their own interests. What's your take on such a characterization of Libyan politicians?
Williams knows them very well. By and large, I would say she is correct. All those who are currently in important political positions benefit from the stalemate. Those include the members and speakers of the House of Representatives and the High Council of State, the rival parliaments, Mohamed Al-Menfi and his two deputies from the Presidential Council, GNU Prime Minister Abdul Hamid Dabeiba and his ministers, most of the incumbents of the so-called sovereign positions, including the influential governor of the Central Bank of Libya, Sadiq al-Kabir, and also the Constitution Drafting Assembly. The longer the discussion about the Constitution is ongoing, the longer they can stay in their positions. All of them have no serious interest in elections, as they can live with the current situation very, very well. And most of them will probably lose their well-paid positions if elections take place.
The UN Security Council decided to renew its political mission in Libya for only 3 months due to Russian opposition to a one-year extension. Russia's Deputy Ambassador Dmitry Boyansky reiterated Moscow's position that the UN mission must get a new special representative before it has a longer mandate. How would such a decision contribute to a standstill or backsliding in Libya's political crisis?
The Russians, but also several other Western countries, were not satisfied with the performance of Williams. She has lost her credibility among the Libyans after the December elections did not materialize. This made it impossible for her to achieve any substantial progress in the Libyan peace process. ANSMIL's mandate has been renewed always for 3 months only since September last year, so this 3 months extension is not really new. Reasons for this are disagreements among the Council's members concerning the restructuring of the mission and, of course, the appointment of the leadership of ANSMIL. What is different right now is that there is neither a special representative nor a special advisor for the UN Secretary General on Libya, a role which could be somehow considered as a substitute for the special representative. So eventually, this lack of leadership could speed up a consensus for the designation of a new UNSR. And in contrary to all the other UNSRs since 2015, the new one will have a major advantage. He does not need to continue an initiative of his predecessor, but he can really come up with an entirely new approach, something Libya is in dire need of.
That was Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. New data show life expectancy in Africa rose by nearly 10 years between 2000 and 2019, but disruptions to health services due to COVID-19 threatens to roll back the gains. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
There's a lot of good news in the World Health Organization's State of Health in Africa report released Thursday. Most notable is the increase in life expectancy from 46 years in 2000 to 56 years in 2019. However, WHO officials note that is still well below the global average of 64 years. WHO Assistant Regional Director for Africa, Lindiwe Makubalo, warns the life expectancy gains could easily be lost unless countries strengthen and make greater investments in the development of healthcare systems. Speaking from the Republic of Congo's capital, Brazzaville, she says Africa has made a good start in that direction over the past two decades. She notes, on average, access to essential services like basic primary health care improved to 46% in 2019, compared with 24% in 2000.
Other factors include improvements in reproductive, maternal, newborn, and child health. Additionally, the rapid scale-up of health services to tackle infectious diseases such as HIV and TB, as well as malaria, over the past 15 years has been a strong catalyst for improved health life expectancy.
While progress has been made in preventing and treating infectious diseases, the report finds health services for non-communicable diseases are lagging far behind. It says the dramatic rise in hypertension, diabetes, cancer, and other non-communicable diseases could jeopardize health gains if those conditions continue to be neglected. The report says the COVID-19 pandemic has unleashed greater disruptions to essential health services on the African continent compared to other regions of the world. Marco Bello says they might affect healthy life expectancy estimates.
As governments work to restore affected health services, it is crucial not only to aim to re-establish health systems to pre-pandemic levels. Rather, it is important that significant improvements are made and they are needed to ensure quality, equitable, and accessible services.
The report notes some progress has been made in achieving universal health coverage, but far from enough. Health officials say one of the key measures to improve access to health services is for governments to increase their public health budgets. That, they say, would reduce the catastrophic out-of-pocket expenditures by households that are pushing millions of people into poverty. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Democratic Republic of Congo has ordered the spokesman for the United Nations peacekeeping mission, MONUSCO, to leave the country because of what it called inappropriate and indelicate remarks. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
The UN peacekeeping mission, MONUSCO, said on Twitter Thursday that it acknowledges and regrets the Congo's decision to ask a member of its staff to leave the country. On Wednesday, the Congolese Foreign Minister, Christophe Lutundula, sent a note to MONUSCO ordering the expulsion of spokesman Matthias Gilman. Lutundula said the decision was based on Gilman's indelicate and ill-timed statement about the security situation in eastern Congo. The Foreign Minister says the spokesman's statement has heightened tensions in North Kivu province. He also said the presence of Gilman in the country would injure the relationship between the Congolese government and MONUSCO. The Congolese government did not specify which statement from Gilman led to the government's order. However, Gilman said last month that the rebel group M23 was acting more like a conventional army and that peacekeepers are not equipped to deal with a conventional army that has night vision equipment. He said UN forces and Congo's national army do not have the capability to keep engaging M23 while also fighting on other fronts. He said if the situation in the east persists, it may create a security vacuum in other parts of the country. MONUSCO has come under increasing criticism in eastern Congo for failing to protect civilians or stabilize the vast region. Last week, more than 30 people were killed in clashes that broke out while demonstrators set fire to UN buildings. The Kinshasa government has said it will assess a UN proposal to withdraw the peacekeeping force, which has more than 17,000 personnel. The mission is mandated to stay in the country for 2 more years. MONUSCO has been in eastern Congo since 1999. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Traditional rulers in Cameroon are urging villagers to stop farming near Nigeria's Gashaka-Gumti National Park after a flurry of human-wildlife conflict. Wildlife officials say animals from the park, Nigeria's largest, have been crossing the Cameroon border to eat crops. Village chiefs say some farmers responded by killing the protected animals and were arrested by Nigerian rangers. Moke Edwin Kenzeka reports from Banyo, a town on the border with Nigeria.
Villagers on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria say hunger looms in their villages after wildlife destroyed several maize fields, leaving farmers devastated. The villagers say Ngum, Katarku, Mayofuru and Mayolelewal, all villages in Banyu, a commercial, farming and cattle ranching district, were hit hardest by the damage. Muhammad Gabdo Yaya is a lawmaker in Cameroon's Senate and the traditional ruler of Banyu.
At Gumti Park, le Nigeria a des réserves fauniques. Nous on a des pâturages.
Yaya says within the past 2 months, animals from Nigeria's Gashaka-Gumti National Park have been causing havoc in Cameroonian border villages. He says lions from the park kill and eat cattle and sheep, while elephants and primates ravage maize farms. Yaya says he is asking civilians who are disgruntled to be calm because Nigerian rangers harass Cameroonian farmers who fight back and kill wildlife from Nigeria's Gachagua-Gumti National Park. Yaya spoke on Thursday while visiting affected communities in Banyu. He said farmers and cattle ranchers should stop extending farm and ranching lands to fertile areas found in Cameroonian territory around the park. He said the farmers and ranchers should return to areas where they were either farming or ranching before. Cameroon wildlife officials say July was a period of harvest and animals from Nigeria's park were attracted by the yields. Villagers said they killed many animals. Wildlife officials attest that animals were killed, but say they do not know the number. Traditional rulers in Banyu, who visited affected villages, said Nigerian rangers arrested some Cameroonians for killing animals. Zubairu Haman Gabdo Muhammadu Sambo, the traditional ruler of Gashaka in Nigeria's Taraba State, says Nigerian troops have been assisting rangers to maintain peace around the national park since July.
We have Nigerian army barracks here, and we always ensure that our people live in peace and harmony. We always try to foster peaceful coexistence, especially at the border community.
Sambo spoke via a messaging app from Gashaka. This is not the first incident of human-wildlife conflict on the border. In 2020, Cameroon's government reported that lions and elephants from Gashaka-Gumti killed 7 Cameroonians and destroyed crops. Cameroonian villagers responded by attacking and killing some elephants, according to the West African State's Ministry of Wildlife. The about 6,500 square kilometer Gashaga-Gumti National Park is said to be the largest game reserve in Nigeria. Both Cameroonian and Nigerian wildlife officials say the growing human presence in the park, including poaching, illegal grazing, mining, fishing, farming, and logging, has led to regular human-wildlife conflicts. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Banyu, Northern Cameroon.
Medical aid agency Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, and collaborating humanitarian organizations are urging the European Union to launch search and rescue operations in the central Mediterranean. They say thousands of migrants are risking their lives to leave Libya for Europe this summer, many in boats that are in distress. A spokesman for Sea-Watch, a partner of MSF, says European authorities are unwilling to fulfill their duty to rescue people at sea and are delaying the disembarkation of those rescued, leaving humanitarian groups unable to undertake more operations at sea. European states also delay the relocating migrants to places of safety. MSF says Libya has a legal obligation to coordinate assistance but rarely responds. If they do, they intercept boats in distress and force the survivors to return. In the past week, the organization has rescued more than 1,000 people on 16 boats. The week before, 444 people were rescued from 5 vessels in distress. MSF says it currently has 659 people on board on rescue vessel, which is above its capacity. Last year, over 1,000 people died trying to cross into Europe. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.